You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Hello, everyone. I am so excited for today. I have a rock star on for you to learn from. I am here with Chris Besch, who is the CEO and founder of Choose People, a company that transforms company cultures, increases employee happiness, and boosts the bottom line. The Choose People 360-degree culture audit is based on over 1,000 hours of research Besch conducted with the Industrial Organizational Psychology Department at Colorado State University. She's also the author of Culture Works, How to Create Happiness in the Workplace. Prior to Choose People, Besch was the CEO of Exodus Moving and Storage. Under her leadership, Exodus became the largest mover in Northern Colorado with a turnover rate nearly 40% less than the industry average and a bottom line twice that same average. Chris is also a proud mother, dancing diva, and a dog lover. Chris, thank you so much for being on with us.
Tamara, thank you so much for having me.
And I just feel like I have to tell everybody, part of the reason why I'm so excited is I've known Chris forever, and I know the incredible work that you do, and so it's great to have you here. But let's back up for the audience, for the community. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you became an expert in the workplace culture.
So it's interesting, Tamara. As you mentioned in my intro, so I used to run a moving company. And when I first came into that moving company, it was quite honestly crazy dreadful, where like people were just yelling obscenities at each other and not in that like, yo, yo, we're tight way, but like in that like, I'm going to take you out. And we were struggling to cover payroll. And it was really a freaky time, quite honestly. And I was like, how am I going to cover payroll? And people, like, I didn't feel good about coming to work, let alone my moving crew. And so I really, I reached out to mentors, I read books, and I was like, okay, we got to get this figured out because I don't have time and I don't have money. And I, like, we got to figure this out. And long story short, between all the kind of information and knowledge that I was able to pull together, I was like, okay, simplified. Right. At the end of the day, if my employees feel good about coming to work, they'll take good care of my customers, who in turn will take care of the financial health of the company. And I even think about this like organizational triangle where you've got like money at the top, you've got your customers on the bottom right, and you've got your employees on the bottom left. And I always say, you know, all of us as business owners or those who are help contributing to the bottom line of your business so that it has financial freedom and financial sustainability, it's not about the numbers. Like you can put your spreadsheet together, but the numbers don't create the numbers. And even though you have to have that financial focus, at the end of the day, it's your people who really contribute to that financial health. And so I really started thinking about my movers and like how I could make it so that they could feel good about coming to work. And that's, I put tons of energy into creating that experience for them because I wasn't the one taking the piano at the switchback staircase like they were. And they were the ones that impacted my customer's experience. And again, we became the largest mover in Northern Colorado. We ended up with, again, that really healthy bottom line and reduced the turnover. And it really was all because of culture. And again, this was back in like 2007, right before culture was even part of the conversation. And people weren't talking about it. It wasn't a buzzword. And I was like, why aren't more organizations focusing on this? Because, right, it makes so much sense. It's not only is it great for everyone's emotional health, if you will, but it's also really good for your financial health. And that's why I ended up working with, as you mentioned, Colorado State University and doing that research to really understand what makes employees feel good about coming to work and how do you measure it. And it really was this feel-good piece, which I define as different than engagement.
So I want to dig in a little bit because I think the story is so fascinating, and partially because as you and I were talking offline, this is a moving company. This isn't, you know, I think sometimes when we think of culture and its importance or the companies that do it well, we think of the super sexy ones, you know, mm-hmm. the ones that are in the spotlight, like the Disneys and the Nikes, and, you know, they're so cool, but they have the money and the resources and they have to be because they're so in the public eye. But you're at a moving company. Like it couldn't be is unsexier a word? I don't even know if it is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but I wanted to kind of highlight that. And I'd love for you to talk about two things. One is, you know, why is it so important even for the unsexy company to think about culture, you know, versus the Disneys of the world? And then the second layer to that is, you know, what are the typical breaks or challenges that you see in these companies when you go into work with them in culture? Because I've got to imagine that a lot of us are trying, but maybe not getting it right.
Mm. So in answer to your first question, I would actually suggest that the more unsexy your work, the more important your culture. Because quite honestly, if you have the sexy work, that's an easier pull. Because when we measure having your employees feel good about coming to work, it has to do with the relationships with the people in your organization as far as like supervisor and coworkers. Then there's the relationship to your actual work. And, you know, there's meaning and job fit and autonomy. And then there's the relationship with the organization and if you feel supported and work family climate and if it's a good fit. And the piece is, if you've got a sexy job, right, it's one of those pieces where, like, if you're a nonprofit, you can get the mission and the meaning and that you create an impact really easily. If you're the Google of the world or the Apples of the world, right, you've got that prestige factor and that sexy factor that, again, helps from a pride and ego standpoint. But if you've got an unsexy job, like a moving company, or maybe insurance, for example, like I think of insurances and someone's probably on the phone like, I'm in insurance. What are you saying? But it's one of those things where it's even more important to really connect the dots for people as far as like why what we do in the world matters, you know, and that was something that literally, and this is one of the recommendations I make to every single organization I work with. And again, it's something that's been talked about, but it is so mission critical to have your team understand how important their individual role is to the success of your organization, and then connect how the success of your organization makes the world a better place. And that's why that mission, that why, that warm, gooey center has to literally give people goosebumps, because that's a pride factor where, you know what, maybe I'm stamping papers all day long, that's all I do, but I'm inspired by what stamping papers accomplishes and what it makes happen and what's the ripple effect and those sorts of pieces. And I could give you an example, like when I would do orientation with my crew guys, and if you can do a thought bubble of a mover, like it's actually pretty accurate. So, you know, so I'd have these guys in orientation, they'd be kind of slouching, hanging out, being like, I'm just here to get a paycheck, like, can we get on with it, lady? You know, they'd be kind of slouching, like, whatevs. And I'd be like, yeah, you're in charge of moving things from A to B in good condition. Like, absolutely. And here's what you need to understand is that when people are moving, like they're going through like moving's hell, right? And then throw in a divorce, throw in death. And like, it's just, you're like, people are not on their best behavior when they're moving. And you have to know that, and you have to show up and have that empathy piece that who you are serving, they're not their best self that day.
Right.
And like, you're helping them through one of the most difficult transitions in their life. And you're putting all of their worldly possessions in your truck and driving away.
Right?
Like
that way. Jeez.
I was like, whoa. And so it's one of those things where all of a sudden I'd be like, yeah, you know, we have this tagline that is great for marketing, but it's our truth. And our truth is we literally provide peace of mind all in one piece. Like, oh. Ba-dun-dun.
Yeah.
And it, right. But I was like, you are genuinely helping people through one of the most difficult transitions of their life. And so I would do this orientation tomorrow, and it was fascinating because, again, mostly young gentlemen, mostly, you know, we lived in a college town at the time. And so, you know, we'd have some university students, but a lot of folks, you know, GEDs and those sorts of things. And they would just get up from that orientation with like plumage. And there'd be this sense of pride. We're like, I'm a mover. Like, I help people.
God, wouldn't it be amazing
transition
like that, you know?
Right? Yeah. And it was. And they showed up differently to our customers, too, as a result of it, because they got, like, I play a really important role in how this goes for this person. And I need to understand they're going through a tough time. And it just switched everything from I'm here for a paycheck to I'm here to make a difference.
So let's flip it for a second. Mm-hmm. And because if I'm listening, I'm thinking or wondering, I suppose, you know, what breaks or mistakes or challenges should I be looking for to know that I'm not doing it right? And I think some of it is the leader or the owner of the business, you know, whether you're in a large company and you lead a unit or a team or you own the business, I think you can sense it. But, you know, what are those breaks or challenges that you see when you go into organizations that need to be fixed to get to that better place of culture or good culture?
Right. Like what's so interesting, Tamara, I thought with this work that there would be just like the common top five. And there are in some ways, right? Like there's silos where like each department is in their own little world and they're thinking, as long as we're doing good, it doesn't matter how the rest of the team is doing, or like literally spitballs over cubicles. Like not in a like playful way, like gross, where you've got a lot of drama and a lot of gossip, where you've got a lot of inefficiencies, where, you know, expectations are pretty mediocre. No one's really held accountable. So everyone shows up, they do an okay job, they call it a day. There's no real energy or excitement. There's where people just don't feel like anyone cares. I mean, that shows up a lot, or where they don't feel appreciated or they don't feel challenged. But I mean, it's one of those things, you know, if you have an extraordinary workplace culture, because you feel good about coming to work, you're excited about going to work and being and working with your team and working on the challenging initiative that's at hand and being strategic and being successful as an organization, as compared to, right? Like I always say, it's the difference between walking into the front doors of like the DMV, right? Or Disney. Like it's like, you know, energetically what it feels like if there's smiles, if there's laughter, if there's that synergy and energy of people working really hard, as to compared to being kind of gray and gloomy and snitchy. And, you know, it's an energy drain rather than an energy fill. So I always just say, like, literally, what is the energetic force field when you walk into your organization? Because in some ways, like, that's the emotional health of what you're looking at. Yeah.
Without giving away any confidential information, is there anything you can share around? Because I know that, you know, some of the work that you do is kind of, it's, for lack of a better way to say it, it's sticky. It's those really challenging situations where you go in and you're like at the DMV going, oh my God, what has happened in this workplace?
Whoa.
Right? Like, whoa, my, the energy here is so thick, you could cut it. Like, it's so bad. Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that you've seen really help turn those situations around?
You know, the very first thing that has to happen, Tamara, whenever there's what I say, you know, there's a huge elephant in the room. Let's say you've got two departments that really aren't getting along, or even two key individuals, or maybe there's some baggage from the past, or your millennials and your boomers aren't getting along. Whatever it is, whatever disunity or whatever big, when I ask, when I'm like, okay, you guys, what's in the space, right? Why is this the way it is? I usually get a pretty long laundry list, but there's usually one or two in there that are huge that some of the smaller pieces come away from. And what I say is, like, listen, if you're in leadership, at the end of the day, like, you have to own this. You have to own where it's at right now, because people will be like, oh, can't they just let it go? Or why don't they just move on? Or like, people just have to get over it, whatever it is. And the truth of the matter is, until it's owned and acknowledged by leadership, it will not be let go. It will not just go away. It festers and it gets gross and nasty and procreates and, right, you know, those sorts of things. And so, quite honestly, the very first thing that you can always do if you have a toxic culture, right? And I do have clients that are like, hey, we're a B and we want to be an A+, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're like, it's not horrible, but like, we're just missing some of that extra goodness. And then I've got the ones who are like, no, like, we literally are terrified that someone's going to go postal. And I kid you not, Tamara, I don't think I've ever shared this with you. I was giving a presentation to a team, the entire team. I was doing a training, and they let someone go that day, and they had to lock down the place where I was presenting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. But the very first thing is to own it, right? Is as leadership, be like, listen, like, I really want to acknowledge that this has been a tough place to work the past few months, or some cases the past few years, right? That there's been some things that have never ever gotten cleaned up that I just need to own the impact that it's had on the team. And I really want to, like, there's an apology there. Like, I really want to apologize for it. And I've literally helped leadership write talking points where, and I'm like, it's got to be real, right? It's got to come from your heart. It's got to come from your gut. Because if you don't own it, you cannot turn it around. You can't come in with rainbows and butterflies and be like, hey, everybody, because it's insincere, yeah. Right? It doesn't acknowledge the pain or the frustration or the disunity or the lack of accountability or the, you know, the anger outbursts that were allowed, you know, or, I mean, again, there's so many different pieces, the gossip that was allowed to really hurt different individuals within the team.
You know, there's three things I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, that I think are really important for Launch Street to pay attention to. And one is that it really is about that accountability, isn't it? I mean, you can't just brush under the rug the shit that's happened. And for whatever reason it's happened, whatever it is to your point. Mm-hmm. And I think the second part of that is that authenticity of really, you know, meaning the message and coming from wherever you're standing and not just, you know, kind of coming up with the canned statement. And the third piece I think is really interesting that you've kind of hinted to over and over again is it sounds like a lot of what makes a great work culture, or at least maybe the output of it, is people who feel like they are contributing to the greater cause or the greater vision of the organization up and down the organization. Would you say that that's true, that it really is about people feeling like they're contributing in the end?
So absolutely, Tamara. So I look at it as a three-pronged way of looking at what creates an extraordinary workplace culture, and that's one of the three. So I talk about where people really have to feel like they're known as individuals and cared about as individuals, and people are stand for one another's success and know if I like strawberry versus chocolate ice cream and what my dog's name is, to matter, where I feel like my work matters, I make an impact, and that's kind of what you were just referring to. And then last is this sense of feeling included and this sense of belonging and shared identity and a little bit of tribe. And that accountability piece actually plays really heavily into that, because when you define the character and competency that you allow on your team, like what's allowed and what's required and what the expectations are, there's a pride factor of like, not just anybody gets to be on this team, right? And so absolutely. And I would just say there's these other two pieces that are also really important.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They all are. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to share a story that you once told me. And because I just thought it was so powerful. I think it's in your book as well, but correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes I get our conversations and what I read. I get confused in my head. But the story is basically about someone who you needed to, it was in the moving company, I believe, someone who you needed to support, but also needed to get to step up to support the team.
Right.
Because I think oftentimes in the workplace, you know, you've got, like you just said, we want to be known as individuals. So I, as an individual, I'm going through something major mm-hmm. that happens in life. However, and that needs to be supported. Yet at the same time, you've got a team of people who need to get stuff done.
Right.
So could you share that story and then remind me if it's in the book or you told me, because I can't remember.
It may have been both, Ryan. Knowing me, like, I'm pretty verbose, and I probably double whammied you. But especially you know, for those of you who are listening, and perhaps you're new in management, and even those of you who are seasoned, you've been there where you have someone on your team who is going through a really hard life experience, whatever that looks like, and you know, you consider yourself empathetic, and you know, and I, at the time, I had someone on my team when I was running the moving company. It was one of my right-hand people, and he was going through this horrible, horrible divorce. And one of those where you've got the custody battle and like tons of court appointments and lawyers and like tons of money going on forever. Like, it was horrible. And, you know, being the person that I was at the time, I thought, you know, man, poor guy. I need to give him some time to deal with stuff. And I was like, listen, man, you do you. I got your back. Like, go to your appointments, do what you need to do. I understand. Like, da, 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 da. Well, it didn't take but, you know, a couple weeks of that. And and actually even a little bit longer than that, that I let him do that, if you will, that I gave him that free rein to kind of go do him, that he started losing credibility with the team because he wasn't getting his work done. And then I started losing credibility as a leader because I was allowing him to not get his work done. And the thing is if people have a mission critical role, which every single person on your team does, if they're not getting their work done, it has a ripple effect. Like, it has an impact on everyone, right? And even if, right, and long story short, you end up enabling this person in a way that's really detrimental to their reputation with their coworkers, right, and detrimental to yours. And I finally got a clue, which is always nice. So I sat down with them and I was like, listen, man, like, I know you're going through hell in a handbasket, and but at the same token, I need you to step it up. Like, I know I told you to go do you, but I need you. Like, we're counting on you. And when you don't get your work done, here's the impact that it has. And so, like, we got to get this figured out because, again, I want to be able to support you in what you have going on, but I also need you to really step it up. And tomorrow it was interesting because I was terrified that, like, here I am, like, hitting this man when he's down. Like, I'm such a jerk, right? Like, what a jerk. And it was fascinating because literally it was almost like, right, here's someone whose self-esteem was actually really struggling because of all this. And you could see he was like, wow, like, I'm needed.
Oh, interesting.
I'm wanted and my contribution matters. And I kid you not, it was like the light came back on in him. And like the next day he showed up and was like 100%. It was crazy. It was absolutely. And I was like, fascinating. Like, that's right. Because work does give us a sense of purpose. We are needed. We are wanted. And our contribution matters. And when you say to someone, it doesn't matter if you slack, you're saying to them, like, it doesn't matter if you do a good job or not, like, your work doesn't really matter. So if you slack, I'm not going to worry about it. That's why it's so important. If you see someone who's struggling on your team, rather than hoping they figure it out or hoping it goes away or hoping it gets better, none of which happens, right? Where you step in as soon as possible and be like, dude, like, I see that you're struggling. Like, you used to be rocking on this piece of performance and it's really gone down. Like, what happened and how can I support you to getting back to where you were?
So one of the things I love about what you're saying is letting someone slack is like telling them they're not important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think as leaders, we sometimes, well, we're nervous to have those conversations, right? It could be confrontational. It's, you know, it's personal. But when you frame it up in that way, why would I let you slack? Because you are valuable. Otherwise, I wouldn't have hired you.
Right, right. And there's, you know, the accountability, you brought up accountability earlier, and that's always a hot topic whenever I go present anywhere. And it's one of those things where accountability is tough because it, I think one day I was looking up for a synonym for it, and it was like thesaurus.com was like, place blame for wrongdoing was the synonym for accountability. And I think we have it like there's this, like, if someone's like, I have to hold you accountable, like, I have to hold your feet to the fire. Like, it has these really negative connotations that, like, someone's watching you or they don't trust you or, and so I always say, like, you got to shift it. Like, you got to switch it up to, like, you're count onable. That's what accountability means, is you're count onable. I can count on you. And like, it's also just, it's the ability to count. It's the ability to have your work count and have your work matter. And we talked about the struggle side, and it's always important to acknowledge, like, you also have to witness when your people are being successful and really having that meaningful recognition, which does not mean a company tchotchke. It does not mean you have to give them a reward. It means you literally eye to eye tell them how much you appreciate them going above and beyond and what it meant to you. Like, that's all it really, really takes. But that, right? Like, time is always, you're like, oh, I don't have time for that. I'm like, you don't not have time for that. If you've got a kick booty performer, like, please go give them some love.
You know, you just conjured up a memory that I haven't thought about in a while. But when I started my career, I was in advertising in New York City on Madison Avenue, this huge global agency. And one of the things I had was this, you know, 1 year anniversary, 3, 5 year, you got a gift and you got to pick from this magazine depending on like whatever page, you know, if you were 1 year, you were page one. If you were 3 years, you could pick the even better gifts from page two, you know, right? So I didn't make it past 18 months, but so I never got the good gifts. But I remember on my first year, my manager on the team I was on gave me the magazine and said, congratulations, we really value you, pick something. And I was so disappointed. Then I was moved teams, as you are often moved in those organizations, you know, you do these stints. And the second team, about 4 weeks into it, Anita May was her name. She was the best manager I've ever had in my life. And she, like 3 or 4 weeks in, gave me a gift card to my favorite restaurant in New York. I must have mentioned it in a conversation or something, just to say, I'm glad you've been moved on the team and we really appreciate your work. And I've never forgotten the drastic difference between being handed that stupid magazine and picking like, a, you know, a clock for my desk that said the company name, which I do not want, versus, you know, this woman who actually, yet another paperweight. Great. So, but to what you're saying, it just, I'd forgotten about the difference, but how important that is.
And that's the known piece, right? Yeah. When I talked about known, matter, and included, like she knew you, like she picked up on that you mentioned that you love that restaurant.
Yeah.
So that's why it was meaningful, because you're like, this is actually something that's like, she sees me.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
I was flat broke at the time. So any gift card anywhere, I was like, oh my God, I can eat tonight. You know, when you start out in advertising in New York in 22, you don't make any money. But anyways, moving on. So I want to actually go back to the word happiness, because we actually haven't talked about that specifically, but that is really your thing, is happiness. But at a much... not just more, I'd say, not just subjective, but also objective level to it as well. It's one of the things I really appreciate about your work is, yes, there's light and fluffy side to it, but there's also kind of the hardcore realities and the cost and the ROI of it. So why, let's start with a high level. Why happiness?
So why happiness? The reason why, and it, I love when I get the crotchety, you know, CEO who's like, I don't need my people to be happy. I just love it. I'm like, oh, I love you. And the reason why is because I get it. I get what they're saying. They're saying, listen, I can't be responsible for someone being happy. I can't make someone happy. And I say, absolutely, you cannot make someone happy. I would never, ever, ever require that of anyone else. However, if you are in leadership, you are in charge of creating a context within which people can be happy, right? There's, again, there's that emotional health. And for me, happiness or even joy, I actually love the word joy as well. Happiness just works better in the SEO world. But the, you know, the joy feels like it's a little bit deeper. There is this piece of viscerally, I know what happiness looks like. When I look at someone, I can tell if they're happy, if they're smiling, if they're laughing, the glow on their face. We know what it feels like to be happy as compared to, right, you hear about employee engagement and employee satisfaction. And satisfaction is like a crazy low bar to hit.
I mean, seriously low in my opinion.
Seriously low. And then engagement is just kind of a, it's a, it's biz speak. And like, I couldn't tell you what engagement looks like when I'm looking at an employee per se. Like, it's just one of those, it doesn't resonate in a way where like happiness does. And so then people push back and they're like, well, great. So I have a happy employee, but I don't know that they're productive. And it's one of those things, well, actually you do, because if someone's not productive and you're having conversations with them about how they're not meeting performance expectations and they continue to not be able to meet them, they're not going to be happy, right? They're going to struggle because they're going to know that they're always coming up short as far as being able to contribute to the team. But the, talking a little bit about the return on investment, because this is the other thing I do talk about, is the return on investment of happy employees. Because again, people are like, oh, this is rainbows and butterflies, like nice to have, culture's nice to have, I don't have to have it. Like, is it really that important? And literally, I mean, I did a whole bunch of, pulled together kind of all the research that's out there on this and took all the numbers. And I was like, okay, so if you have a $40,000 annual salaried employee, and that employee is unhappy, they will cost you an additional $39,000 to your bottom line per year.
Oh, good God.
And that's conservatively. Now, if that same employee is happy, they will contribute an additional $21,000 to the bottom line, which is a $60,000 spread or a 1.5 multiple of their salary. And so the good news is that if you're like, well, my people aren't unhappy, the good news is you're not losing that 39, right? But if they're not... But if they're not happy, you're not benefiting from that 21. And so it's just from a financial standpoint, and those, again, Tamar, I kid you not, that those are conservative numbers. And again, I've got the whole breakdown. If you've got a CFO that you're like, I want to take this to them, and it's got all the stats for your analytical types. So on my website, you can literally down the return on investment of happy employees, the calculation, and all the stats, because I think it really is important for people to see, like, in fact, in black and white, happiness is a huge, there's a crazy return on investment to companies that have happy employees and organizations that have happy employees, like the financial freedom that's created by it. Like, and it's a no-brainer because it's not that, it's not about throwing money at your people. It's not about having crazy perks. It's not about having the tornado slide, right? Like, it really isn't. It truly is about just having your people feel known, matter, and included. And that's not about throwing money at them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The organizations that we work with over in Launch Street, I'd say that, and the ones that have a good culture and they're, you know, we're adding that layer of innovation, mm-hmm. they don't have ping pong tables. So the whole, you know, like, you know, when I go in and I see the ping pong table, the beer truck and the, you know, the slide, I actually get concerned.
Right.
Like, dude, yeah. Not as good as you want them to be. No. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had to spend all the money on that crap that nobody uses. So,
right.
I mean,
right.
I'm not saying lipstick you shouldn't have some fun. Yeah, but it really, mm-hmm. I don't know, it feels like it is at the end of the day. And I have to assume, right, that if you've, I mean, it's how you are in life. If you are happy and you feel like you're contributing and you feel known and, you know, you have your, like the three prongs you were talking about, mm-hmm. then you're more productive. And I would have to imagine, I don't know how you quantify this, and maybe you have, but if you are okay in terms of your culture, you may not be losing the money, but I would venture to say that there is an opportunity cost that you don't even realize because you aren't, your right. employees aren't going after those big ideas. They're not yeah. stopping to solve those frustrations in the day. They're mm-hmm. not looking for new ways to build revenue. Unlike a happy employee that's probably actually looking for those things more proactively.
Well, and you know what's interesting when you say that, Tamara? So one of the stats that contributes to, you know, all of those numbers is that employees who are happy make 26% fewer mistakes.
Wow.
Right? And it's one of those like, wow. And I thought about that, like
paying attention.
Right. It's because they don't care.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. It's not because you're out intentionally trying to break things, but it's like, you just don't care. You just don't put the attention towards it. And I'd say the same thing with innovation, right? And your brilliance and in working with organizations is that if I don't care, why would I bother? Why yeah. would I innovate?
Exactly.
Like, if I don't care, like, I'm not, why am I even going to try? Like, right? Like, innovation requires caring.
Well, this is part of the reason why I wanted to have this conversation is because I think the work that you do really maps onto innovation. Because if you want your people to be innovative, you need to create a culture that allows that to happen. And part of mm-hmm. a big part of allowing that to happen is creating a really great culture where happiness and joy are front and center, where things work, where the elephant in the rooms are called out, where things are not broken. Because, you know, there's nothing that squelches innovation more than those elephants that nobody will recognize, as if it is not like putting its 2 tons of weight bearing down on your shoulders. And you're like, nope, yeah. we're all good here. It's all fine.
I come in with my flashlight. I'm like, look.
I know. No, I'm not crushing under the weight. I'm totally fine
right.
here. And so that's part, you know, to kind of loop it together for the community, that's part of the reason why I wanted to have this conversation is I think that happiness and innovation really do go, you know, in your definition of happiness and how it matters and how the outcome from it matters with innovation. You know, the other thing that you talk a little bit about is finding your secret sauce and how important that is. What does that mean?
So I'm not of the belief, right? Not every workplace should have the same culture. There's a reason why they're like, lots of different cultures work really, really well for those organizations. And so within that, you know, if I have an organization that I'm working with, and let's say they're actually doing pretty darn good, they're doing pretty darn great from a culture standpoint, one of the first things I always recommend to them is like, oh my goodness, like it's working. The secret sauce is working. The magic is here. Capture it. Like, what are all the ingredients that go into your secret sauce? Why do you have an extraordinary workplace culture today? Because there will come a day when things don't feel quite right, right? You walk into those front doors of your organization and it's not quite as snappy, right? It's not quite as energized. And what you can do is you can literally go back to your ingredients list and be like, what's missing, right? What are we missing? The oregano, the cinnamon, and our chili, you know, like what's missing here? And then again, look to add it back in, because there's a lot to be said for capturing what's working. And of course, always if you can expand on it, but the first step is really just to capture it.
Well, that's so, I'd never really thought of it that way, but you're right. And then you can see when things are going wrong and you can say, hold on. And, you know, if I understand you correctly, it's not, happiness isn't everybody comes today acting like a cheerleader.
No. Mm-mm. Nope.
So, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Because, like, all my engineering folks that I work with would hate my guts. Like, they'd be like, hey, get that lady out of the building.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep. No. Not at all. So
that's really, I just have this vision in my head now of engineers in cheerleader outfits. It's just not good.
No.
Talk a little bit about your book, Culture Work. So you know, I have to say I had the privilege of doing a pre-read and it is phenomenal. And I was sad to give it back with my edits because I wanted to keep it, because it really felt like a more of a tool book, something I could reference often versus one of those books that you're like, God, I totally agree. Happiness and culture and joy do matter. And then you put it away. So talk a little bit about the book, why you wrote it, what we can find in there.
Oh, thank you. The Culture Works book is really intended to be a how-to guide. It really is, because I think a lot of organizations are like, yes, we would like to have a better culture. And we hear a lot of, you know, why that's important and a little bit of the what around it, but not that, like, how do you actually create it? And my whole intention with writing the book, along with the workbook, was really to support teams and managers and leaders of teams to be able to have the tools so that they can, you know, if you've got those millennials and boomers that aren't getting along, if you've got old baggage that you can't seem to get rid of, if you have these silos, if you're not sure how to do appreciation in a way that's meaningful. I mean, there's so many different pieces that are in there, but it's like this hands-on, here's how you go make it happen. And it really, this work is so important to me. Having people feel good about coming to work is really important to me. There's no reason for them not to. And I just wanted to have a bigger impact. I just wanted to get to more people, right? When you're a single individual, and there's lots of people doing this work that are fantastic at it. And again, just trying to be part of the shift in our nation so that literally when you go to a cocktail party, which I don't even know who has those anymore, but you go to I should have one of those. I'll have one of those. I'm inviting you tomorrow.
Perfect.
So, you know, you go to
cocktail gown.
Please set up house. You know, when you ask someone like, how do you like your work? It stinks, right? Because like 8 out of 10 times people are like, oh my gosh, my work sucks. I hate my boss. I've got this coworker, right? Like it's boring. It's so disheartening to me. And ultimately at the end of the day, I literally want to shift the national conversation around work from woe to joy. Like I just don't, there's no reason not to, because again, it helps our communities and it helps the financial health of the businesses, which also helps our communities. So that's why I wrote it. And it really is intended to be like, go make it happen, Captain. Like, here's ABC, like run with it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it being public and live on Amazon so I can actually just go buy it again, because I had to give you back my copy. It's like,
I know.
No, I want it back.
Well,
will you share you and I talked about a moonshot goal. I don't know if you've gone public with that at all, but if you have, will you share that? Because I think it is really inspiring how big of an impact you're really talking about trying to make here.
So my moonshot goal, my vision for Choose People really is to help shift that national conversation. And one of the things for the tipping point for a conversation to shift is 14% of the population. And if you look at the worker population, 14% is 17.6 million people have to be talking about having joy in their workplace for us to start shifting it. And I'm pretty confident I can make a million, that I can reach a million people, you know, by hook or crook, with the book, with podcasts, you know, you name it, to really shift it towards joy by, let's see, we've got 2020, the end of 2020. So that is the master plan, is Choose People is contributing to that effort, to, because again, a lot of people are working towards it. I want it so bad. I want it so bad. I also want to say, Tamara, let me just say real quick, is that if you are interested in purchasing the book today, you can go to our cultureworksbook.com website and order it today. It is pre-order. We're actually officially, well, I guess by the time this comes out, yeah, go on there and purchase it.
And we'll put a link in the show notes, just so you know. And you also have a little bit of an extra bonus possibility for our listeners. So share that.
I sure do. So for those of you who are listening to Tamara's fabulous podcast, if you go to cultureworksbook.com/VIP, you can sign up for our weekly culture tip, in which the intention is every week to give you something, again, really tangible that you can run with your team on to improve your workplace culture. And we will put you in for a drawing for a free Culture Works book and workbook, which is like a $200 value.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Okay, so everybody go sign up, for the tips are fabulous anyway. So that in itself is a huge bonus. And you might win a really incredible package. So Chris, my last question for you is, what's the one thing people would be surprised to know about you? You know, a passion, a hobby?
Oh, I think the one thing they'd be surprised, Tamara, that's a trick question. So one of the questions I ask sometimes is like, what's the most common misperception of you? And so for me, it's that I'm an introvert. So I love people and I love presenting and I love working with teams. And for sure, the way I fill my energy bucket is either in one-on-one time or solo.
Yeah.
So that's probably, I mean, it's not, but that's like, I'm sure there's something juicier and more interesting, but like, that's probably, I sweat like a pig at Bikram yoga. Like, so that, throw that in the mix. And that's a great visual. So there you go.
I will take those two things. That works for me. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. That was absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, thank you, Tamara. I really appreciate you having me. And again, to all you listeners who are innovators, keep on innovating. I just think it's phenomenal.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.